Coming up on Open Source with Tony Motley, how marketing and advertising trends change in the face of the global pandemic and social unrest sparked by the murder of George Floyd.
We have an educational system that continues to raise police who have a social perspective that makes them immediately feel threatened in the presence of a black man. That's a problem.
Corey Seaton is an award-winning ad executive. Over his 20-year career, he's leveraged his expertise to help major brands including Toyota, Chevy, AT&T, Burger King, and countless others to become smarter, younger, hipper, and more culturally relevant. Corey Seaton, welcome to Open Source. So I guess the first thing is you've written a letter to advertisers. And I just wanted you to share with the open source audience what that letter was about.
Yeah, well, you know, in the wake of the, you know, everything that's going on with George Floyd, I'm seeing a lot of brands for the first time open up and speak a lot more about diversity, inclusion, stand in solidarity with Black Lives Matter, all of this. And I just thought it was a perfect opportunity to kind of keep that momentum going. So I wrote an open letter to advertising, basically reminding people of the power of advertising. You know, advertising has solved social problems in the past. We've gotten America to buckle up. We have greatly decreased the amount of drunk driving that happens on the street. We kind of ended littering, you know, which was like really big in the 70s. So we can change behavior. We've stopped people from smoking. You know, we rarely see people smoking in public. So we've done it. But what we haven't done, so we have the skills to kind of hack pop culture and impress upon new behaviors to people, right? Which to me signals that we have the power to end racism if we put our minds to it. But I don't think we can because there's still so much racism in advertising. So the letter was just kind of about that, asking people to kind of take the challenge to end it in advertising first. So we, as the one industry that is probably best suited to help stop it, can get to doing that bigger work.
Mm-hmm. And for you personally, in terms of your career, what have been the barriers and challenges that you've had to overcome?
Well, it's been a lot. You know, I entered advertising in 1999 at Campbell Ewald in Michigan, over in Warren, Michigan, Detroit area. And I was the only black guy in the department, which felt just, in 1999, it just felt weird to me, but it was the case. And I guess what the biggest thing that I can say is that whenever you talk about racism, people immediately go to like this short checklist. Well, I don't say the N-word, or I don't hate black people, or I think what we never talk about is that racism is a spectrum, right? And that, like, you know, lynching a black man or like killing people is like at one far extreme end of that. But I think at that way other end of that is where you start to talk about white privilege, is where you start to talk about having cultural blind spots, where because you're in a position of power, what you don't know or what you don't acknowledge begins to harm people. And I think I've experienced a lot of different things on that spectrum, from the lack of acknowledgement, lack of consideration, to like, you know, I never forget, I was in LA once and I had written a radio script and it was circulating and it went through the proofing department. It was a straightforward script, but I think I used a black celebrity was my talent, because the person knew that it was a black, basically they interpreted it as a black script. So this proofer went and changed every word that ended in ER to A apostrophe, being funny, you know. So Ringa, you know, Stinga, just basically, you know, turn my script into Ebonics, and did it in a whole lot of different ways.
This meant to be a joke, or he was seriously changing the script to this?
I didn't know this person, so I don't know if you can joke with me if you don't know me, you know? So when the scripts will come back from proofing, and I remember when I got it, it was all marked up. I got it. Somebody emailed it to me, and it was one of the most, you know, had I been in that building at that moment, I was on like a three week road trip. If I'd been in the building, I probably ran downstairs and like confronted somebody, and like, it'd probably been an emotional moment, but I was on a road trip, and I was mad that in that moment, day passed. I kind of forgot about it. I didn't change it. I didn't make any changes, but there were series of those kind of things that over the course of a career, you look back and you realize how many times they've happened. And it's like, wow.
I'll tell you, when you say that, and I typically don't share, but it just brings to mind when I was 19, I worked at a chemical corporation in the blueprint room. And, one of the engineers, when I was at lunch, put a watermelon on my desk. And I just, thinking about what you said, reminded me of how outrageous that was. And he did it, I knew he did it deliberately, because with malice, because when I came back from lunch, he was waiting to see my reaction. And I just think, you know, something like that is so insulting. And these are the kind of things that we experience in our lives. And that's not the first time, but it stands out. But anyway, so, how do you move past
that? Yeah, so many of them happen. You just forget.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I think that Dave Chappelle sketch, Keeping It Real Goes Wrong, I think that nailed it better than anything I've seen. Like, I think the Keeping It Real Goes Wrong moment, I think for us to stand up for our rights, we are always having to consider what the backlash might be. Even as I wrote even as I wrote that letter, which is I took my time and tried to word it perfectly and not put in any trigger words. And the only reason I had to be that careful, because I know there's an opportunity for the backlash, you know, not being, you know, being blackballed, or, you know, like those ramifications. Simply for speaking your truth, simply for standing up for yourself, simply for standing up for your community, there's always a backlash.
And you may hear other people say, Corey, he's difficult to work with.
Yeah.
And true. That, you know, those kind of things are troubling. But let's jump into culture, and let's talk about how culture is relevant to advertising and campaigns, and how you've used leveraged culture, how you've used it to express your ideas.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I've just realized is that I think African Americans, because we've always dealt with racism, we are a very kind of discerning target audience. We intake messages through a lot of different filters, and we're very critical. But the good side of that is if you can speak to black people, you can speak to anybody. Because there's so many opportunities to kind of, like, you know, get yourself in trouble and, you know, have things fly off the rails. So when you become really good at speaking to Black people, I think it helps you being able to speak properly to women, other groups, and obviously to, I think, even white America as well. You know, I've had the pleasure of working for the past 12 years at Black-owned companies that did nothing but targeted advertising. And, you know, we've been able to like spot different trends in our culture, tap different celebrities and influencers, you know, always tapping into things that are constantly shifting the broader culture, not just our culture. And, you know, those are the things that tend to, that the general market tends to leverage, that tends to blow up and helps reach masses of people, you know? So, yeah, I think the influence of Black culture and advertising has just been huge over the course of my career.
You know, I think one area people's kind of sleep on or don't recognize, or maybe just don't know, is how much diversity is in the Black community. You know, there's a lot of different yeah. audiences in that market. They really are.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's interesting because, you know, I think people got a chance to see how many, especially during the Obama years, how many Black conservatives there were. You know, I think that was pretty eye-opening for people. I think they had, it was eye-opening for me because I had never, you know, during our other presidencies, I had never seen all these Black people who were conservatives come out of the woodworks. But the minute we got a Black president, like, they were everywhere. So, you know, yeah, we run the gamut. We don't think all one way. We don't live all in one place. We don't have one religion or one set of beliefs.
No, we don't all live in the hood and have nothing to lose. Sorry, too simplistic.
To the point, if you're not at the cookout, you don't know the dynamics. You know, you don't know the dynamics of having bougie auntie versus having hood auntie. And that we all at the table together and, you know, yeah, and everybody in between. So
when you approach, let's say you've done like Burger King or any of these products, how do you differentiate those audiences and in terms of the style of messaging that goes out?
Well, I think that's where the age demographics kind of come into play. There's always a sweet spot, you know. I mean, you know, you never just target the Black people, right? You never just target this imaginary. It's you figure out what you're selling, and then within that group, and it might be multi layers of the targeting, but age is always part of it. I'm not going to sell a product to my little cousin who just graduated college the same way I'm going to speak to my mom who's retired. You know what I mean? So, you know, the dynamics of age, the dynamics of behavior and lifestyle. And once you start to really break those things down, you can really pinpoint with a laser focus who you're targeting to, who you're talking to, who you're targeting, and how to speak to them.
Are you, when you're doing this in terms of at Burrell, at an agency level, do you guys, of course you do surveys, you've got research, are you doing executive briefs? Are you doing these little shorter PowerPoint decks to create?
All of the above.
Yes.
All of the above.
What kind of time are you putting into that? And what kind of manpower goes into that?
Oh, gosh. We have a strategic planning group that goes out across the country. They conduct research. They partner with other companies to get a lot of research numbers. So we end up with a lot of just a lot of information, you know. I mean, and it reminds me of, I think, you know, you hear people complain about the music we hear on the radio, but I think people forget, like, how how much research goes in to some of this stuff. And it's not an accident when you hear some of the songs you hear, because they know who they're talking to. They know who they're targeting, and they know what they want to hear. And it's the same thing, but that by the time we receive all this research, we know what they're craving. We know what motivates them. We know what turns them off. And then it's up to us to craft the message to communicate to them in a positive way that gets them to lean forward instead of leaning back.
So is the goal of a campaign just, say, if you're selling a product or you're helping a retailer, are you just trying to raise awareness? Are you trying to move people to buy? What is typically the goal?
They're multifaceted. That can be multifaceted. So there are awareness campaigns. There are campaigns that are a little bit more about tactical information about a product. And, you know, when you start to see product demos, you're hearing how a product works, and you're getting into the details. You know, there's also brand advertising. A lot of the stuff that, say, maybe Apple or Nike does, it just makes you feel positive about that brand, you know. And all of these things can be running at the same time. You know, I can be running brand advertising to make you feel positive about my brand at the same time. I'm going to the deep details and how it works, and so on. So, yeah, it's multifaceted for sure.
Yeah, and I think is brand advertising really reserved for market leaders, or what would you say to that?
I look, brand advertising is kind of like your LinkedIn page, right? It's that introduction. It's that thing that makes me believe in you. It's the nice photo. It's the well crafted bio. It's the perfect resume. It's the thing that I can take in and go, yeah, like, that's a solid dude. I never met him, but it seems like a solid dude. What I'm seeing makes me feel good about who that person is.
And so when you see a company like Volkswagen go back, mm-hmm. how do you, yeah. if you were advising them, let's not give them any free advice, but just maybe one nugget. If you were advising a company like that that's had some missteps, how do you fix that brand or polish that brand?
The first step is always owning the mistake. I think Domino's is probably like the best case scenario for that, right? Domino's went through a period where, and I think Domino's is the number one stores out of Detroit. It's right there in downtown Detroit. But they had some issues with some of their workers sabotaging people's meals, doing gross things to the food, and they kind of shut it down. They took a second. They owned the mistake. They went back. And when they rolled it back out, they had a new recipe. They had a new way of preparing food. They were very transparent about how they were doing things. And Domino's, like, in a short amount of time, did a 180. You know, I think you look at a brand like the NFL that has had a lot of trouble, but still isn't quite ready to own all the mistakes. You know, I think yesterday Roger Goodell came out and, you know, I think when people say protest, people immediately get upset, but then they forget the long spectrum that there is when it comes to protest. And at the far end of that spectrum is burning and rioting and breaking stuff in the streets. And I think sometimes you have to see that to go back and go, these guys just wanted to kneel for about 60 seconds before a game, and we were upset about that.
Well, they were outraged. And then I think too, Corey, I think history is important. And, you know, we got to remember and teach people about the Boston Tea Party and the whole idea of revolt and protest. This country's built on that in large part. And the ability to express ourselves That's our First Amendment right. And so, you know, we can't only accept it or allow it when we agree. You know, sometimes people disagree and they want to speak their mind, and we have to allow for that.
We live at a time where cancel culture is like so rampant. If you say the wrong thing, if you post the wrong thing, you're canceled. You're canceled. You know, it's funny to me. Like, I think I can speak from my own personal point of view. Growing up an athlete, being an athlete in college, the conversation around, gay culture has changed so much, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
It's changed so much. It's changed so much, in fact, that I can't even quite go back, because I wasn't recording the conversation I was having with my friends back in, say, when I was in college. But I would assume that if I did, the things coming out of my mouth then are very different than the things that have been coming out of my mouth for, the past 15, 10 years, you know? So, yeah, I think people should have that opportunity to kind of to change. If we say we want change, and we have to, allow a little leniency for people to actually change.
Well, I think really, Corey, in the world of advertising, as it impacts our own personal views, we realize that change is a constant. And things are always changing. You couldn't take
absolutely on
many of the campaigns you ran 5 years ago, even last year, wouldn't work right now, wouldn't be as effective.
Absolutely.
So what's happening is the world is changing, but then there's this particular segment or issues where people don't want to let go, don't want it to change. And that's really the issue that we're confronting right now. How would you say, if you want to change people's minds, you talked earlier about how we, you know, helped stop smoking, helped stop littering, helped improve HIV/AIDS awareness, helped make gay culture more acceptable. How can advertising impact the issue of race in America?
Well, in a huge way. Like I said, we have the ability to tap into pop culture, and the amount of information we have, the amount of creative minds we have is probably unmatched by any industry. But I think you can't make that change if the people that you're trying to reach aren't in the boardroom, aren't in the meeting rooms, having those conversations to help guide you. You can't have a room. You can't be like the NFL with a room of all men and say, we're going to fix domestic abuse.
Corey, I've been in a company, I'm sorry to interrupt, where the general manager, we had a in-service about sexual awareness, sexual harassment. And days later, the general manager stood in front of many, many of the employees and made jokes about women's breasts. I mean, it's tough. It's really tough to get people to change their minds. And I know you've had the experience. I've had the experience recently in corporate culture where I am the only black person in the room. Are you still experiencing that?
Well, like I said, the last 12 years of my career, and I've been at black-owned agencies. So
no, but I mean, when you reach out to companies or you have meetings with companies, are you experiencing that?
I mean, I think it's definitely better from when I first got in, got in advertising, for sure. But it still exists, you know. And I think sometimes it's not always, like I said, you know, sometimes it's all men talking about women. Sometimes it's all straight people talking about gay. Sometimes it's all white people talking about black people. So the point is, if that room isn't diverse, and I mean diverse in a lot of ways, and I don't just mean one person who's kind of standing out, but diverse in a lot of different ways, races, lifestyles, genders, all of it, all of the above. That's the only way that you reduce the blind spots that allow you to make those decisions that aren't thinking about other people.
And then what role do you think unconscious bias plays in our culture in the advertising marketing world?
Well, huge. Like the, and that's why I brought up the spectrum of racism, because I think a lot of well-meaning people don't know exactly how guilty they are of continuing the problem, right? Like, you know, if take a, there's an open director role at your job, right? And instead of posting it public, you go, oh, I have a friend over across town who does this. I'm just going to call him and see if he's interested. And because you're white and because that person is white and the job is never made public, that there's a closed loophole on that job, that potential to bring in somebody new, somebody different, somebody talented, somebody qualified that doesn't look like everybody else in your organization was just closed. That loop was closed before it ever got a chance to be open. You know what I mean? So that person thought they were being well-meaning, right? I know somebody, we got this job. Let me reach out. But by trying to be well-meaning, they were extremely a part of the problem.
Well, and that's basically what's happening with the NFL and coaching. Coaches get hired that other coaches know they're familiar with. And so many of the black coaches don't even get real opportunities to be heard.
No. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I think there's one minority owner, right?
Yeah, Jacksonville, Sal Khan.
Yeah, one minority owner. I don't know how many general managers. I think when you look at the number of executives in the NFL compared to the number of players, like it's crazy. The percentages don't line up. And I think that has a lot to do with why black people tend to like the NBA better. I think you see more representation from coaches to general managers to executives behind the scenes.
Well, the NBA is advanced to the point where we don't, as fans, we don't really calculate who the hires are because we see that there's opportunities for people in the front office and as coaches. So we don't really have to monitor it like that. Or, you know, we just in the NFL, you're really suspicious about, especially with some of the people that you've never really heard of, lifelong assistants and retread failed head coaches continue to get hired. And in fact, we saw that in Denver with this guy that spoke out about how he didn't see racism. And then John Elway had to come in and shut him down. So it that kind of thing perpetuates some of the problems.
Yeah, white guy saying he can see racism. That's hilarious. But, you know, that once again, that's part of the problem.
So, again, as we get, you know, just to come to some sort of solutions here, inclusion, real inclusion, like you said, across a diversity of different people, different genders, race, income dynamics, all of that is part of it. What else needs to happen in terms of what we see in terms of the ads that are going on that can change race in America?
In every agency, we do something that's called diversity training, right? And diversity training is supposed to, the goal of diversity training is supposed to make your employees more aware of what it is to be a better global citizen, to not only be to raise the awareness of other cultures, but also to be tolerant. And, you know, but what it really is it's polite training. It's politeness training, right? It's teaching you, it's really training you how to be polite, but it's not really tackling the bigger issue. And I think what we need instead is racism training, like really talking about what racism is. I think as minorities, we have a deep education about what racism is because it touches us it forces us to look at the problem historically. Like, we all are kind of PhDs in racism. You know, we've gone out and we've talked to people for thousands of hours. We've done research. The movies and documentaries we naturally watch, like, we have a lot of information about it. I think that same information isn't being shared to white America.
Well, so, we have a unique experience, and I don't know you, I've never met you, but I can tell you this. I guarantee you've probably had a negative experience with the police in your life.
Absolutely.
Okay. And the other thing is that we share, and these are commonalities. I know so much about white culture that conversely, most white people don't really know about black culture in the same way.
Exactly.
I mean, I know from classical music to absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. We get it, because I can talk to you about Led Zeppelin and Rolling Stones and Neil Diamond and symphonies and quartets and string quartets and all those things and jazz and country. I know all of that stuff. I have to know. That's the language.
You have to know. That's the point. You have to know.
Right. But you can, as a white person, you can ignore the majority of the black experience and just live your life and be successful. Black people don't have that opportunity for the most part.
No, we don't. And I do think that there is also a, there are people who buy black culture, so they might purchase the hip hop records and they might go to a couple of movies, but then beyond that, the deeper dive into the history, and it doesn't happen. So I think there are a lot of kind of maybe white consumers who spend money on black entertainment, but and that, I think, they feel maybe, oh, I know, but there's another layer of that.
Absolutely. Listen, black people have been entertaining white people for centuries. That is exactly. Got nothing to do with it. I mean, I just think exactly. about what you said about hip hop, and I think about some of the language in hip hop, and it reminds me of that Richard Pryor joke about Vietnamese and learning how to say the word, the N word. And if you get your ass kicked, you know, you said it right. I mean, these are things that are just, they're funny because they're painful. That's the thing. And so I just wonder how it changes now. We've seen George Floyd. We've seen people protesting. They're still protesting. What's the next step? What do you think? What are the trends? What are the things that we need to look at going forward in the rest of this year?
Education in schools. We have an educational system that continues to raise police who have a social perspective that makes them immediately feel threatened in the presence of a black man. That's a problem, right? Like that's a real problem. So, you know, I think our educational system has to start. We have to start there. I think it should take longer than 8 weeks to become a policeman. It's too important of a position in our society. They have way too much power for me to be a policeman in 8 weeks. I think you might have to, what we call a police academy, make it a 2-year ordeal. Make it. I mean, you know, I had to go to school. I went to undergrad, and then after undergrad, I went to a 2-year art school portfolio center just to get into advertising. So that was 6 years of my life dedicated just to be qualified to maybe get the job that I ended up entry level job. Okay. And these guys aren't putting in that kind of time. They aren't being trained. They are largely, bringing in a lot of white bias and, a lot of, prejudice, and all of that comes out when that black man, it's nighttime and you see this black guy, and your internal fears kick in.
Right. I think it's not their your training, worst,
not
worst not nightmare.
Your training.
Yeah. Your fears.
Your training doesn't kick in.
Your fears kick in. And those fears are based on the perception of black people and the notions of white supremacy, and that black people are something to be feared. And that's why and they play that card. I feared for my life. And that frightens me, because that means I might die.
Right. But guess what? You can train people for that. You can, if those same cops had, before they could become policemen, had to do ride-arounds with veteran black cops and go into black communities and deal with black people. So the first time that they ever dealing with a black person in their life isn't on the side of a road when they have a gun in their hand and a badge on their chest. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So that's who needs that training. That racism training that we talked about, that I'm talking about, we need advertising. Policemen definitely need that. So, you know, education, how we train our police, you know, and then the bigger issue is nobody can be above the law.
And I think that's a big issue. And a lot of people that want to even support the president will not embrace the fact, the truth, that he has manufactured a situation that puts him, and he's forced it, puts him above the law. And his attorney general is doing, and I don't really, this is not a political podcast, but I have to tell the truth. I mean, even what we've seen with these unmarked, unknown militarized police force in Washington, D.C. is an affront to the Constitution. And it puts people, I mean, to have people that have the power of life and death and confronting the community, whoever, black or white community, whoever they are, and you don't know who they are, who they're accountable to, that's a scary situation, and it shouldn't happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I didn't mean to go there today, but just real quick before we wrap up.
It really is all connected, though.
It is. Connected. What are the trends outside of race? What are the trends in our markets now going forward? What are we going to, if we're going to sell advertising for the rest of the year, what do we need to be aware of?
Well, I think with the pandemic, I think with everything that's happening with the protests, I think all targets are now very discerning about where they spend their money, which brands align with their values. And I think you're going to see a lot of people really thinking about where they spend their money. So I think it's going to be really important for brands to connect on a human level and not just be in sales mode. You know, I think we have to build that connection back to these consumers, because I think there's a lot of distrust, and I think people care, people a lot more. Their consciousness, political consciousness, social consciousness has been raised, and they want to spend their money in places that they feel are the right places. So I think it's going to be really important for brands to prove to the people, not just with a Facebook post or, you know, a press statement, but to really prove what their core values are. If you say you're about diversity and inclusion, that you show it, that you're very transparent with it, and allow that information to really reach the people.
Well, Corey, I appreciate you. I mean, this has been an interesting, twisting, turning conversation about race, about advertising, about targeting and marketing and culture. But it's been interesting. It's been enlightening to me, and I hope that my audience has gained something from it. And I really, really appreciate you giving us some of your time today. Corey Seaton, ad executive. And this has been Open Source. Thanks, Corey.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, like the show. Rate the show, tell a friend. Talk to you next time. Open Source with Tony Motley is a production of Duet Digital Media and McLaughlin Media.